Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. From our fair city to the swamps of the Potomac, law enforcement time bombs are ticking. That means it's time to welcome to WNHH Radio our resident law enforcement expert to help make sense of all this mess. Yep, hello, former New Haven Assistant Police Chief and current Connecticut State Senate Sergeant-at-Arms John Valeca. Thanks for taking time out of wrestling with politicos and recidivist lobbyists to join us for today's program. Also in the studio is the bravest man in New Haven, if not points further. Are there? Harry Droz, the WNHH station manager. And unapologetic, yes, even this week, unapologetic, more than ever, Donald Trump fan. Welcome, guys, and thanks for coming to the studio. Cool. So, John, let's start in New Haven. We're going to make our way up to Washington, D.C.
Okay.
And Hartford. But we have a new police chief. Yeah, your mic's on.
Okay, good.
We have a new police chief,
right.
Anthony Campbell in New Haven. It was kind of a anti-climax when Mayor Hart picked him last week. We've been saying for about 9 months that he's going to be the chief. Any surprises there? Any thoughts on his appointment?
No, I think...
And John, if you could move the mic up a little, just point it up toward your face.
Yep, good?
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah, just get real close.
Thanks.
What'd you think when he was appointed?
I think, you know, we kind of saw that coming. If the mayor's comfortable enough to make him the acting chief, the chances are good she's comfortable enough to make him the permanent
chief. Do you think that was a trial period to see how he was going to do?
No, I sincerely think the mayor, you know, wanted to open it up and let other people compete and see if her thoughts were actually on par with what, you know, it was a confirmation of what she thought, I believe.
Would you have done in her position?
I think I would have done the same thing.
I mean, you would have picked him as the permanent chief now?
Sure. If it's not broken, why fix it? You know, it's been okay there. From what I hear, you know, everything is kind of settling down nicely. And look, you know, policing, we're at a stage in policing where we need to evolve, all right? And Anthony Campbell is anything but your traditional chief. He's not the, you know, criminal justice major who's been to the FBI academy. He's a different type of chief, and maybe I think that's what we need right now.
And how is he different? How does he differ from that bio?
I think that the mayor put it accurately. This is, he crosses lines. He's got the ability, you know, he always has, Anthony. He's got the ability to bring people together around a common goal, right? He may not have the operational experience. We know that. You know, we're not going to make Anthony into something that he's not. But he's got assistant chiefs for that. And he's smart enough to pull people in the loop that are going to help him with the technical things that he can't do.
So he grew up, I think it was in Harlem, was it? His mother was a correctional officer who met his father when his father was in jail, drug dealer. Had kind of a rough, not rough, but, you know, challenging upbringing. But he got into Yale,
right,
and then Yale Divinity School. He's a minister.
Yeah.
And he was hired 19 years ago when New Haven was promoting community policing. That's
right.
When you were hired in that era, too.
Yeah.
And he was an avatar of that. His most famous story is that he was working an extra duty job and some guy was fleeing the police in a car. Yep. Hit Anthony, went like 15 feet in the air, almost died, was out for a long time. But then he went, showed up in court and asked the judge to go lenient on the guy who hit him.
I was actually working that night.
And oh,
I was,
you were?
I was
Where was it, Hamilton?
It was E Street, I believe.
Yeah, that whole area. Right. I always picture that's where cops get hit.
Like, yeah, it was in, I believe he was working an extra duty assignment at the bar, the club over there. And the car went through the parking lot, if I recall correctly, took the fence down and everything else.
And you were on the scene?
Pretty good. Yeah, I was working that night, yeah.
What do you remember from that?
I remember, he took a pretty good whack, yeah. And I think we caught up with the guy, to be honest with you. I think we caught the guy who did that. But those were, that club over there gave us a lot of problems. So.
Strip club?
No, it was I think it was an 18 and over kind of club. Oh, I can't remember the name of it, but it gave us a lot of issues. We ended up closing it down because of it.
So when Matt, you said that Anthony has shown he can bring people together. Now, what operational experience does he lack? Has he never done detective division?
Well, he spent a lot of time in the training academy.
That's when he ran the training academy.
Right. He had a niche for that. And listen, so when I say operational experience, you know, hasn't spent many years as a patrol officer, many years as a detective, many years as a supervisor working in those operational areas. But he does have a niche. He does have an expertise, and that's in the training of officers, which is what we sorely need an update in training now. So there's a good aspect for your new chief. He's
and the chief has always had, I mean, the department has always had divisions. Back in the day, there was the Gaelic Garlic Wars with the Italian American, Irish American. You often have black officers on their own organizations. Sometimes feel they're not getting a fair shake. I'm not sure quite where the Latinos officer group often fits into that, but Is that the kind of division you're talking about overcoming? Well, whom does he need to bring together at the moment?
I think, yeah, that's exactly what I mean. I think that what I saw when I was there, you know, from the time I got hired, was that officers banded up, you know, within their cultures. And I, last time I was here, we spoke about the biggest division was, I thought, the competent and the maybe the not so competent anyway. But I think that he's got a
so
way
to... So we're going to have hyphenated Americans, competent Americans, incompetent Americans?
No, I shouldn't say competent. I said the officers that tend to work to the same level. In other words, the officers that want to work all the time, that want to be there all the time, versus the ones that just kind of want to do what is expected of them and not go any further. I think Anthony's got a good way of appreciating the officers who work very hard and also trying to motivate the people that maybe just want to hit the
And I noticed that there's not this much backbiting with him. People kind of see, I don't know if some people feel maybe he'll be easier to get what they want from, but I'm not hearing the same complaints about different groups trying to undercut him.
Yeah.
I mean, some people who wanted the job had some supporters who were doing that, but I mean, the union doesn't seem to be upset with him.
No, because you know why? Because Anthony is before he's a chief, he's a good person. He's a good guy, you know? And you could have confidence. If he does something, you begin with the confidence that he's made a move in everybody's best interest, right? Instead of a move with malice.
Now, so he's got some challenges coming up. For one, his body cams. They finally chose
the company
they're going to get body cams from. Next Monday night, it's going to be approved by the Board of Alders just in time of deadline to get reimbursed for him. So every cop's going to have a body cam. They're already doing that in Brantford. They're already doing it in Hamden, do a lot of parts in the country. What are we learning, John Vileka, from the use of body cams, and what should New Haven know as a new chief oversees the rollout here?
Well, I mean, like I've been saying, we've been talking about this now for a year, that the body cameras are going to present a side of policing that nobody's seen before, right? The side that is not so, an ugly side, let's say, you know, a side where there's, because use of force is allowed and is necessary at times, the chief is going to have to learn how to quarterback that, is what I usually say.
And how are we going to quarterback it?
By spending some time, I think Robin Porter's bill is good, and we'll get to that in a minute, but we'll talk about putting out information. I think that's a big deal. I think Anthony's...
They've been weak on that, even now.
Right? And I think that's going to be a big deal.
These controversial cases, we don't get stuff explained to us when, and you're saying these videos are going to capture that. You know, there's been a lot of debate about body cams. They became popular in the last couple of years in the wake of controversial police incidents of alleged misconduct, and the White House on down have been promoting them. But some of the analysis has been that, in fact, it helps the cops more than the public. And that's not necessarily bad because we're not against each other.
Right.
But that often it shows the perspective the cop has, not the citizen. There's no substitute for the rights of citizens to photograph and video, on which the New Haven Police Department has a horrible, horrible record of respecting the rights of reporters and citizens to photograph and video them. That this can't take the place of that. But what it can do is it often shows that the officer is right when people are complaining. There are cases when officers do wrong. But more often than not, it's not an accurate accusation against an officer. And we've seen locally that the videos have borne that out.
Right. I think a lot of the police officers believe that the body-worn camera is an asset for them. But I think for the people at the administrative and the executive level, I think it's going to force the chief of police to put information out in a much more expedient fashion, simply because the public doesn't have to wait now.
You didn't do this, but most of the top cops I deal with always hide behind this idea. Everything could potentially jeopardize an investigation, so you never tell anybody anything's going on unless you want to.
Right.
And listen, that's got to change.
I thought that when we came off the corruption scandal in 2007, myself, the people who are now leading the department, Tony Reyes is one of them. Hopefully, you know, somebody like a Rachel Kane will get her chance. But we got together, and these are the people that we worked in the bureau, and we said, look, the only way we're going to get our credibility back is by being ultra transparent here, by putting
that happened? You remember everything from the St. Patrick's Day parade incident to when they arrested one of our reporters to at this recent incident where the local cops followed up on the state cops at the anti-Trump protest and threw this guy in some of the hospital who was unarmed protester going up the street and then allegedly lied about it. Why aren't we hearing explanations of that?
I think that, you know, I think this is like a learning curve for
six months later, they still have a reporter in court after they arrested him on this really bogus funny terms when their own internal report shows that they violated their own procedures, but somehow whitewashed it anyway. I still have not heard a single word from the top New Haven police that maybe that wasn't a good idea.
Right. So, I don't like to speak to specific instances if I'm not there as the chief. So that would be something you would take up with the new chief. But I could say that this is... the way that we're moving forward in policing is the chief is going to have to be a very involved vocal.
So in other words, these body cams are going to have more video out there, and there's more citizen video right out there. You're saying the chief needs to tell the public what's going on.
Well, right, and he's going to have to explain exactly. Look, you may be seeing something on this body camera that looks like it's very, it looks like it's abusive. It looks like it's ugly, and it is. But here is why this happened, and you know, here are the reasons for that. And
what if it is? What if it is wrong?
Well, then he's going to have to take swift action.
We have not had a case yet. I can't think of a case where the New Haven police in modern history have said we were wrong. Well, including cases where they were clearly wrong.
Right, and like we've been saying for a year now, I say body cameras are going to change policing, and that's it. Because the reality is this: the public isn't going to have to rely on my interpretation of what the investigation shows anymore. It's going to be out there. It's going to be out there on video, and people are going to see the videos, and they're going to look to their chief, and they're going to say, listen, make sense of this, and if it's bad.
And how soon will they see the videos? So talked about that last time you were on. Yeah. Cities like Seattle that have body cam programs have found that they're so inundated, and Harry, this is sort of an IT challenge. They're so inundated with requests because if you have, how many officers are out on a shift, like 40?
Yeah, anywhere from 40 to 60. And
so every hour, you're going to have 60 hours of videos, like YouTube's, you know, exponential mathematics of how many hours per hour get uploaded. You're going to have all that many hours that you have to store, and then you go through, and if a lot of people start requesting routinely to see video, and you're not going to have a budget, a lot of staff positions to go through it, how are you going to meet that?
That's the thing, and Harry would be able to comment further, that the IT end of this is the most challenging. Right, there will have to be a unit that is dedicated.
There's no money for
this.
That. You can take cops off the street.
Hey, well, listen. This is Anthony Campbell. You wanted the job, and you're a smart guy. Figure it out.
Well, but you're gonna have to juggle. You're gonna like Harry Jones. What you tell Harry?
You're gonna
have
to juggle some resources. You're gonna have to juggle some resources. Maybe change some people's responsibilities in their areas of work. But you're gonna have to get that done. So when you talk about what's gonna go out, it's simple. You're gonna have to triage what goes out. So if somebody makes they want a request on a misdemeanor arrest, that's probably gonna wait a lot longer than people who are asking for an officer involved shooting, so to speak.
So Harry, what would you do if the chief asked you how do I deal with the IT challenges?
There's nothing that you could do IT wise for the.
It's a human.
It's challenge. A human, you know. It's a human being actually looking at the video. I mean, it would have.
They're gonna have to figure out how to say because there's private information they can't release. Like you don't want to show compromising video of, let's say, a person domestic violence case. They come into their home. They talk about that kind of thing. Children, minors. Well, so they could always find excuses to take a long time in FOI. This is my experience. Freedom of Information requests. Other times they could stop making excuses and know that they have to guard for that kind of stuff and take care of it a lot quicker than you think you can.
Yeah, it would have to be associated with any reports, and the information would have to be guarded to a certain extent. But still, you can't get around actually having people at a desk viewing the video. Yeah.
And John Vileka, there's some other challenges. There's a union contract. They've been working without a union contract for about a year.
Right.
What needs to be said on what should the chief be doing right now?
As far as the union contract, I'm sure they're in negotiations with it. Are you talking about with the body cameras?
No, contract? Just the union contract over. They don't have a contract.
No, I think that it's tough for me to say that being not knowing the culture and the climate right now, what's important with the union negotiations.
But for instance, we're training a lot of cops who after a year or two get picked off by another suburban department.
Well, there's a two-year.
But then after the 2 years, and then we get some money back. We don't get a lot of money back. We don't make as much as we pay in training them.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is that it's less dangerous to work in the suburbs, but you get paid more.
Right.
So we're saying we should pay more, but we have a budget problem right now. There's not a lot of money we have. And then years ago, we allowed officers to retire after 20 years, and it wasn't because the officers were greedy. It's because the city said, how do we keep good officers? Because the suburbs are allowing them to do that.
Right.
So we put that in. Then we said, holy cow, how are we going to afford that? Cops come at 20, and it's not, I don't blame the cops for doing that. That's what we did to try to track them. So our last contract, we said that newer cops have to work the 25 years.
Right. So this kind of harkens back to an article that you had up there maybe a few months back about what the city of New Haven, the community, wants from its police department. And if it wants walking beats and what we have rolled out there as community-based policing here in New Haven.
Yeah, let's not say that word anymore.
Okay.
It's not going to happen.
So, but listen, that type of model, without being transformed into 2017, that's the same model that they used back in 1992 when I got hired. It's labor-intensive. It costs a lot of money. At the end of the day, we have to reevaluate that as a community and see if that's really what we want.
So would you take Walton Camps off the beat and go back to cars and chasing after crime after it happens?
No, I would. What I would do is I would figure out, I would lessen the walking beats. There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that I would take some walking beats back. Well,
that's but you're right. It costs money. Right? It could, no question.
If you double
costs
the
money,
walking beats, every officer you put on a walking beat has to be backfilled. Their 911 car has to be backfilled simply because there's call volume coming in.
Yeah.
Right. So I would say, look, let's use our walking beats to the best of our ability. Let's find out where we actually need walking beats. And a lot of the walking beats that are out there now can be adequately changed over to park and walk type beats, where the officer is walking, but they have a car. They can actually respond to 911 calls as well. So you don't have to backfill that car. You could still have that officer, and they could still be walking a beat and engaging the community.
And finally, how does the new chief rebuild community confidence that's been shattered over the last couple of years?
I think that he's on the right track. I think he's talking about transparency, and I think that he has to live up to that, and he has to be transparent. Now, we could preach transparency until something happens, and then we say we can't send this information.
So the first test awaits us.
So yeah, and you're going to have to. It's going to take a strong chief to stand up there and say, look, in the eyes of all the investigators that don't want me to send this out there, in the eyes of the people who think it's going to damage the case, I'm weighing the community safety against sending out this information, and I'm going to fall on the side of community safety. Like I said, we were together for many, how many cases do we interacted with?
And you say, were always transparent.
And look, it wasn't
as hard as people think.
Yeah, it may not be the best thing for this case, but the good it's going to give to the community, it outweighs the bad it's going to do to my investigation.
And we're talking about law enforcement challenges in New Haven, up in Hartford and in Washington, D.C., with John Valeca, a resident law enforcement expert of WNHH Radio here on WNHH, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. And if you got some questions, if you're watching on Facebook Live, feel free to pop them there in our studio. Manager and resident Donald Trump fan and brave fellow Harry Dross is also here joining us. So up in Hartford, and you're up in Hartford, John, right. You're the Sergeant at Arms of the State Senate.
Right.
Two New Haven legislators have been pushing a bill at the end of the session we have now that looked like it wasn't going to get anywhere, but an incident in Bridgeport put it back on the table. Robin Porter, State Rep, and State Senator Gary Winfield have a police accountability bill that would require the state police to investigate all allegations of excessive force against cops within 15 business days. And right. It would also require that all police officers under investigation for use of excessive force be placed on unpaid leave. Right. Now, there's been some pushback. The state's attorney says we can't do it in 15 days if we don't even get an autopsy in 15 days. So the question is, do we force the state lab into better work, or do we give them the money to be able to do quicker work? What was your reaction, John, when you heard about this bill?
Well, I see both sides of it. All right, you from the law enforcement, the investigative end of it, we don't want to ever push. We don't want to put time. We don't want to put days and time frames on things, because then that breeds. I don't want to say misconduct, but that breeds shabby investigative work. But what you see here is what Senator Winfield and Representative Porter are sending forth is frustration. It's frustration in a system that doesn't give information, and people are left not knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
So whenever you see somebody is asking for, putting a time frame on things, and we want this, and this is what we want to know, that means that somebody has dropped the ball, and we're not making our community feel at ease, right? I think this has manifested itself when we just talked about a lack of transparency is forcing our legislator to force police officers to tell them what's going on, and that shouldn't be, in my personal opinion.
So, I don't know if you've been following this, Harry, the case in Bridgeport where an officer recently shot to death a teenage boy, young man driving a stolen car. There are very conflicting versions of what happened there. There was another version in the Connecticut Post this morning. They interviewed the other occupant car who was also shot. That's what got this back on the table. The community's very upset about it. It does have echoes of the Malik Jones case here in 1997. The police chased someone who had a stolen car. They claim they got out. He backed up to run them over. They almost could have gotten killed, so the officer fired some shots to kill the driver. The person in the car said that didn't happen at all, that his friend drove down a wrong street, wrong one way. He started backing up to get out of that street. The cops were after them and came up to the car and sort of ran after them, and he wasn't trying to run them over. The state police are investigating it.
Right.
And what's your take on this, guys?
take? Well, it just seems really interesting, right? Because you're driving a stolen car, and what you're worried about is that you're going on a wrong way street. I don't think so. I think that excuse is just that, an excuse.
What do you think about the shooting?
The shooting, if a car is headed towards a police officer, it's a lethal weapon. You have to protect yourself.
John, what do you think about this?
Well, I that's true. I mean, if the police officers are out there and somebody's driving at them, that's an absolutely deadly force situation. But, you know, like I say, we've been talking about these issues for a year now, a lot of these different issues, right? Let's scroll back to why are we chasing a stolen car? Just merely a stolen car? Is that what this is? Or is it a carjacking? That changes the complexion, right?
Right, we talked about that, yeah.
But if so here's what I would say to my fellow officers, and I would tell my guys that used to work
for me.
And
you said that
too.
Often when there is a carjacking, that's often en route to someone getting shot. So
right, so if this is a car taken in a carjacking.
That was really interesting when you talked about
that. You know, this is a different scenario. But when I view the incident in Bridgeport, I wonder if it's just strictly a stolen car. And if it is strictly a stolen car, I'd have to say to my brother and sister officers, why do this? Why chase the car? Why put yourself in a position where you can possibly be run down and you have to use deadly force? So if we have a policy, a pursuit policy that we adhere to where we're not chasing just merely stolen cars, this incident doesn't even happen.
Yeah.
Right?
So I'll tell you what way I'm bringing that up. I was just at Harry's point. This reminds me of the Malik Jones case when he was involved in some bad stuff in East Haven. He was meeting some guy he sells guns with and stuff, but he wasn't committing crime at all at the time.
Right.
The police didn't know who he was, but they chased him across state lines, high speed on a highway into Fairhaven, into a lot, and then killed him. And at the time, a lot of people said that Harry was. They questioned why Malik Jones was doing what he did. And the police said, well, they were backing up toward me. So he was going to, it's a deadly weapon. I was going to kill him. When this is investigated, what they saw happening is why were they chasing him across lines in the first place, state lines, town lines? Second of all, why, when they backed him into a lot, did they get out of the car and rush on foot at this car in the lot? Third of all, what the evidence was not that he was driving toward them, that the car was moving less than 10 miles an hour. It was rolling or whatever. He was in a lot. The cops clearly put themselves in a position of danger. There was no evidence of a carjacking. It wasn't a stolen car. And again, in this case, we often get confronted with these difficult situations when it involves a person who's shot who is not a model citizen. Okay? So you have a guy like this guy who's a teenager. He's stolen a car, right? And who knows what else he was up to. Malik Jones was not an upstanding citizen. But is that... does that then cloud the question about why cops, because that's when it's a test. It's not the test with the model citizen. Of course, it's terrible if you like take some model citizens and do nothing wrong ever and you're harassing them and you create a situation. But it's when you're dealing with the people who aren't the model citizens, why do you need to always chase them? Why need to get out of the car? Like in the case of Malik Jones, they ran up to a car, broke the window, pointed the gun in. Why do you need to do those things? Harry, any thoughts on that? Because you don't seem to have much sympathy for the people who get shot.
Wow, that's kind of harsh. But it's not that I don't have any sympathy. I've been pulled over. And I if they ask me to get out my car, I get out my car. I follow directions. So say I'm dumb enough to just take off and lead a chase with police following me. And they corner me in a parking lot, and the police get out the car and order me to stop. I'm going to continue.
Now, what happened to Jones? They said it was just rolling. He was backed in.
Well, rolling.
I mean, it wasn't fast. It
rolling
wasn't like,
is not stop.
Right. I understand. But is that the thing when you're, why would you run up to that?
Why would you run? Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's their job.
So I'm sorry to say you didn't have sympathy. I'm sorry. I'm sure you don't think the kid, you know, you're not happy someone got shot.
Well,
you're
saying someone else should die, but I also think, we have to start respecting police.
Right. So no one argues that you should steal a car. No one argues that you shouldn't stop and immediately obey an order. But don't you think the police should have some responsibility for how they might escalate a situation, create a situation unnecessarily?
I don't know. I disagree with John.
Do we need
John.
To have these fatal confrontations every time?
I disagree with John when it comes to not chasing stolen cars. If my car is stolen, I want it to be chased down.
But that creates more.
Well, why?
John,
you have insurance on it, right?
Well,
and you would want it to
don't.
Be chased down to lead to an incident like this, right?
Some people don't. Some people have the basic.
I understand that,
but they don't get their property.
It's a property loss. I get it. Okay, I do get it. But more often than not, we do have insurance because by law we're supposed to have insurance, right?
Well, no. What I'm talking about this, the minimum insurance, which is just liability, which you don't
but
get
Harry,
your car
you
back.
But Harry, you think that every crime warrants a chase that escalates it? Because sometimes you can get that car further down the road without banging up your car.
I don't know. The other day I was driving, I was crossing Whaley, and some guy on his four-wheeler was doing a wheelie, a Papa Wheelie. And I'm wondering, I know I saw cops. They're parked up Whaley.
Right.
And I'm wondering, why isn't somebody...
They've been really wrestling with that. I've been in the meetings that the cops talk about the difficulties because this is serious. What they do with these illegal vehicles on the road,
they get right in your way.
They almost hit a 7-year-old kid at the bus stop. And it's very dangerous, but it's hard to catch, isn't it, Sean?
Well, yeah. Well, go back to saying, in the flood press job and this other job here, no matter whether the police officer has made a bad decision, put himself in a bad light, doesn't have any bearing on whether the use of force is justified. In other words, we can't take those circumstances into account when the split second comes to use force. Granted,
the state's attorney said that they couldn't prosecute the officer who killed Leak Jones, that even though he probably shouldn't have chased them at high speed on the highway, but probably shouldn't have run up the car, probably shouldn't have broken the window, probably shouldn't have shot him because he said he saw a go to hell look on the guy's face.
But it should be an indictment on the degree of training we get in those situations.
And you never see police departments talking like that. You always see them making excuses about the narrow and out.
But
they never really change the way people are trained to
supervise is what I was really getting. Not really our baseline officers, because it's on the supervisor and it's incumbent upon the supervisor that if the officer gets worked up and there's a stolen car and emotions start to flow, it's the supervisor that has to return everything to a normal stance and say, listen, we're not going to chase this car.
So why is it so hard for police departments to look at structural reasons for these incidents when they happen? Is it because they get so defensive when the public blames them and focuses on the narrow issue of whether you should prosecute an officer?
So I think that, Harry just brought up, it depends on the chief executive of the agency on what they believe. If they believe that they should be chasing stolen cars, then the officers are going to do that. If you have a chief executive that is against that, the officers are not going to.
But I often find that it's a chief executive and other cops who will agree in theory with looking at ways of avoiding these kind of situations. But as soon as a cop is accused of something, they get so defensive. Like I'm even thinking in our case with our officer, like they all believe you shouldn't grab people's cameras and break the policy. And they don't believe you have to arrest the reporter because for 10 seconds you couldn't tell if they're hearing each other about how fast he's walking. And yet they circle around and get so defensive that over time they come up with more and more reasons. It's okay. There's never a single ability to revisit it, even after internal investigations show that policies were not followed.
Right,
they lose the ability. Or after the Floodquist thing, as soon as people got into camps about whether at that last moment he should have fired his gun, no one in the department was looking at whether it's endangering police officers to have them running up on foot at a car in a lot and breaking a window and pointing a gun in and driving 80 miles an hour on the highway after him.
I get that, but at the same time, it's like you're not looking. First off, they're making a split decision. It's at the moment.
But how do they get in that position of that split decision?
But wait. Now you're looking back to the missteps that they've made. But once they're in that situation, you can't judge them for their missteps.
That's why they so rarely get prosecuted. But my point, Harry, was that because we get so focused on that issue about that split second, I have never seen police departments be able to look back at all the other missteps and talk about how to keep their own officers safer as the public.
I think that's the good point you made, that if we're going to, and listen, I'm a police officer. I get it. I've been in these situations. If we're going to say and give our police officers and say, listen, in that split second, we understand. We completely understand. Doesn't matter how you put yourself in that situation. We understand the use of force and, you have to protect yourself and you have to save your own life. I get it. But at the same time, we can't just completely ignore how we got there. You know what I mean? So
I think what it does to a cop, I've talked to cops who've killed people, even if they were, in the right, it really changes your life.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Nobody wants to do that. Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that. But the thing is, you have to address how we end up and how we put ourselves in these bad situations sometimes, right? And we have to start to think on how we can do things better in the future to make sure we don't end up in those situations.
Have you ever been in a position where you had to shoot somebody?
Yes. Yeah.
What happened?
May 31st, 1994. I was responding to gunshots fired at Roberto Clemente. It was a...
school.
Yeah, and it was in the basketball court there, backed up to Washington and West.
And what happened?
They were having a gunfight, and I was coming in off of Button Street, and one of the people that was involved in the gunfight was running from the gunfight, and actually just, we ran into each other. I exited the car, and he had a gun in his hand. I told him to drop a gun. He didn't drop the gun, so I shot him.
Where'd you shoot him?
In the shoulder.
Did he die?
No, he didn't. He didn't die.
God, you must have been relieved. What were you thinking?
Yeah,
Like, what was going through your mind?
Just that. You know, here I am. It's 1994, so I'm 23 years old.
Wow.
You know, and it's the last thing I would think I'd be
doing.
What
time of day was it?
I was on the 4 to 12 shift, and I had just gotten out there. So probably about 5 or 6.
What time of year?
It was Memorial Day.
Okay, so it was light out.
Yeah, it was light out.
So you went up. He hit him in the shoulder. What happened if he shot him in the shoulder?
He stood there, and I told him to get on the ground and drop the gun. I actually dropped the gun once I shot him, and then he got on the ground.
And what happened after that?
He pled to...
No, I mean, like, did he go to the hospital?
Oh, yeah, he went to the hospital.
Did you go
to
the hospital, and released. Too? Or?
I didn't, and I went to the union office.
Yeah, of course. And then what happened later? Did you ever talk to that guy again?
Well, yeah, he sued me. I mean,
he sued you?
Yeah, he sued me.
What happened?
He lost.
He did lose the suit.
Yeah, yeah.
So you had to spend a lot of time going to court.
Yeah, yeah.
And what went through your mind later?
I was glad I didn't die because, you know, the reality is, you know, born and raised Catholic schools my whole life. I mean, you know, you start to think about stuff like that. You know, you wonder if it was morally the right thing to do. You know?
And what did you conclude?
I sincerely believe that he was going to shoot me. He had a gun raised at me, you know, but that didn't help things later. You know, I was hoping that he didn't die, to be honest with you.
And did you have nightmares? Did you have any kind of mental health?
Really want to get into all that, but a little bit, but you know,
it'd
I think
hard.
I think a lot of the,
I always
a lot
get scared
of the
like what
do.
Happens. You know, I'm not a great driver. I don't drive much. Yeah. I'm always scared like what if I run over somebody? How do you live with that?
It's hard. It's difficult. You start to question a lot of different things, but yeah, it happens. And that's why I can tell you from firsthand experience, like these officers, most of these officers, don't want to be involved in this. And a lot of these things, I think, you know, I was almost known for as a sergeant calling these chases off. I hate them. I don't think they ever end up good. I think a lot of the times the cops are waiting for their supervisor to look, stop me, and tell me to stop doing this because, you know, if not, I kind of feel as if it's my obligation here and it's my duty. But if the boss tells me that I don't have to do this, then I'm okay with it too, you know?
Well, I'm okay with reminding people that are listening to WNHH, Dateline New Haven, 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We're here with our resident law enforcement expert at WNHH. John Velucca, what are you holding up for me?
The bill? You want to talk about the bill?
Yeah, now tell me. So the bill, I remember last time you were here, one of your concerns was that you felt that an officer who's under investigation for excessive force shouldn't be placed on unpaid leave because he hasn't been proved guilty.
Right.
What about, yeah, I kind of see that. What about paid leave? Because officers take such exception to that, saying, why are you punishing us? And I always felt like if you're getting paid, what's the issue?
So I think that the bill that Representative Porter is setting forth is pretty good. I tell you, if we are to gain credibility as police officers, we need to support bills like this. It's got to be tweaked a little bit. There's no doubt about that. And a lot of this stuff is already founded in statute already, all right? So the new thing is the 15 business days, you know. Mm-hmm. We could probably, if we negotiate and we talk, we could probably get that expanded a little bit for our interests. But I think what the bill is actually saying is like, look, we need information and we want to know about it and we're not going to wait 2 or 3 years.
So what would you agree? What would you agree with in the bill?
I think that you can get, I think what Representative Porter is looking for is a preliminary report as soon as the police can give one to, you know, to assist the community, put the community at ease as to what happened, whether this thing is a good shooting or this is a bad shooting. And my thing is, and we spoke about this to Representative Porter and myself, is we do this anyway as the chief. I do this. I get updates anyway. Mm-hmm. And whether this is a good shooting or whether it's not. And I know that the officers are going to say, oh, you know, you're not paying me anymore and you're putting me in.
But before I get to that part, someone say you're prejudging. Why don't you wait till the town investigation is done?
Right. So I think what she's saying is that, look, if this looks like it's a bad shooting, right, let's take a bad shooting and you know, you're 2 weeks in. And by then, as the chief, your investigators are telling you whether this is shaping up to be something that we should have concern for or whether this thing was by the numbers. Mm-hmm. The reality is, all she's not asking for anything that we don't do anyway. So if the investigators came in and say, listen, chief, this is not good, and it looks like it was reckless, it looks like it was, the chances are good that I'm going to pull this cop off the street and put him on unpaid leave anyway. You know?
Why unpaid?
Because it looks like if my investigators are telling me this is shaping up like this is going to be a possible violation, then now we've entered into an area where we're looking at maybe arrests, and we're certainly looking at administrative violations, right? So I don't think and she's asking for, she implied the preponderance of the evidence standard.
But I still don't get why unpaid rather than paid. Isn't under union rules that if you haven't been proved to dumb misconduct, you should be paid in the meantime?
And I agree with that to a degree. But I also know that there are some agencies, not New Haven, so to speak, but there are some agencies who leave officers on paid leave for years at a clip.
Right.
When they know that, you know, they're going to be guilty of misconduct somehow, some way, maybe not arrested and convicted, but we know pretty quickly if there's misconduct, if there's administrative violations. And quite frankly, to be honest, you're a taxpayer. Why do you want to pay a cop that you're just going to eventually look to fire anyway? You know you're going to go that route with them.
John, I can't believe you get me in this position. People have labor rights. I mean, if a cop has not been found, we don't think an individual should be jailed if he doesn't pose a threat to the community, if he hasn't been found guilty.
Not
jailed. Why should a cop be unpaid rather than unpaid? See, I always get in the fight with the cops about when I say, like, if that case in St. Patrick's Day, there's nothing wrong if you get paid and they put you on desk duty. They say, well, that's a punishment, your pride.
And I agree
that there's nothing wrong with desk duty if you're paid. But I still don't understand why I get what you're saying for years, if you know something's looking bad.
What I said about the St. Patrick's Day parade was there was no investigation to lean on for evidentiary, anything to substantiate any evidence or anything that was going. It was simply a knee jerk. Look, this is, we're going to investigate that. And while we investigate that, we're going to put this guy on desk leave. I didn't think that was appropriate. But what the bill is asking for is an evaluation and review. And if there's violations. So in other words, how's this? We've been together on how many shootings? Multiple, right?
Yeah.
Police officer involved shootings, right? And what do we say? We say, okay, we're going to do an investigation, and we're going to parallel that investigation with our administrative internal affairs investigation. And once we find out whether there's going to be criminal charges, we're going to go further with our administrative investigation.
We're not disagreeing here, and Harry Shepard, how you feel, but the only issue here is why is it unpaid rather than paid?
Let me scroll back. Instead of doing things the way we've been doing them, do the criminal investigation first and then leave all the administrative violations till the end, we're going to move that up to the front, and we're going to see if there's an administrative violation. As soon as we see an administrative violation, we're going to act on it instead of leaving it, is what I'm getting.
Does her bill deal with that?
Yes, and that's exactly that's what she's calling for, essentially, with the 15 days and the unpaid leave. She's saying, look, within a certain time frame, the chief should know whether there's at least been department policy violated. We're not saying get arrested. We're not saying be convicted or anything like that, right? We're saying that he should be able to determine. And we should, since we have a 90-day cap on our internal affairs investigations now once they're completed, right? So as the chief, if I get an internal affairs investigation, I need to act on it in 90 days, right? So in this case, if you're investigators...
So favor this bill by Porter and Winfield to say that the state police should investigate maybe not within 15 business days, but promptly, right? You say maybe tweak that. And that you also believe that police officers under investigation for use of excessive force be placed on unpaid leave.
Unpaid leave. Go ahead.
If in those 15 days or whatever you realize that there were some kind of departmental violations, move up the investigation of departmental violations, not just criminal.
I think that I think it will lend to the transparency and the credibility of our department if we move the administrative investigation up instead of leaving it.
And the bill says to do that.
Right. And look, she's also saying too, if we've put you out on administrative leave and we keep investigating this because we're not going to stop, right? And it's found out that in the ninth hour or whatever, that somebody comes forward and exonerates you, then you get all your back pay. Then we're willing to say we were wrong. You didn't violate anything. So I don't think there's anything wrong with this, but I think that once we throw that flag up of putting cops out on unpaid leave, everybody starts to say, oh, geez, you know, they didn't do anything. But I'm saying if the chief gets an update from the investigating agency where there is a flagrant violation of department policy that he could be actionable upon, then he should do that instead of waiting for, he or she should do that rather, than waiting for a criminal investigation, which can take a substantial amount of time.
Well, there's a criminal investigation going on in Washington, D.C. right now about whether members of the Trump administration were colluding with the Russians to manipulate the what happened in the presidential election. And the president fired his FBI director this week. The FBI director said that he had asked him to go easy on someone in that investigation. What did you think about that as a law enforcement person, John?
Well, I tend to believe Jim Comey from what he says, only because I know that when you're speaking with, somebody who is your boss, so to speak, and they say things that are off color, you do make notes. I mean, I've done that.
Did you do that when you were chief in New Haven?
Yeah,
I've
done that a number.
Conversations you wrote down?
Yeah. And then you just, you type them up, you put them in your drawer just in case something is to come of it. You
well,
have
was
to
Trump
produce.
Right to fire him?
You know, that's a thing like, we could talk about this with Campbell too. I think once you take over a head position like that, I think that you should be able to put these, position like that, you should be able to choose who you want. Even if it's an apolitical position.
So you didn't have a problem with him getting rid of the FBI?
Well, I kind of looked like he was going that way anyway, but no, I don't have a problem with it. He's the president. I mean, he should be able to pick people in
some people
positions.
Thought the timing was bad because they thought it was because
the timing
of
didn't.
The Russian investigation.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. The optics of it are no good, but I mean, this is not really, in my opinion,
and
the
what
White
if he
House
had said to Flynn, what if he had said, Flynn's a good guy, could you try to find a way to let him off?
Well, I mean, that's a clear obstruction of justice.
Harry, you think it was a clear obstruction of justice?
Well, there's no proof of anything, any of the words that we're talking about, but since we're just going to make up stuff, let's just talk about this. If he said, I hope, Flynn's a good guy. I hope we can move this along. I hope you could be lenient on Flynn. I could hope ill against John today.
Terrible. So Harry, you
and
didn't
get
ever,
hit, he could get hit
so
by a car tomorrow.
So you didn't have any
tomorrow.
Problem then. With,
is that is
but
that
Harry,
my fault?
Didn't you have a big problem when Bill Clinton went into the plane on the runway with Loretta Lynch? Even
yeah,
though they had
and,
no,
and I would,
they had
I would
zero
love to see
conversation.
Those notes.
They had zero evidence of any conversation about the case involving Hillary. Zero.
And you
there's
know
not
this.
Even been a suggestion.
And you know yet, this.
No, but there hasn't been a suggestion. But how do you know there
what
wasn't
mean
in
there
Trump's
hasn't been
case
a suggestion?
Here?
Many people have suggested it. I'm suggesting it right now.
No, but Harry, why do you think there was evidence there that there was a problem? But in the case of Trump, where the FBI guy wrote a memo saying he did interfere, there was no interference.
Well, obviously, Loretta Lynch, the problem is not with Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was being Bill Clinton. Loretta Lynch should never have taken that meeting. And I would love to see the notes when Jim Comey confronts Loretta Lynch. What are you doing? I would like to see those notes.
But you don't see a contradiction here of your immediate reaction saying Lynch should be fired, what they did was wrong, when there was zero evidence, there was any discussion of an oncoming case.
We're talking about Loretta Lynch.
But then the President of the United States meets with the FBI director, and the FBI director says, go easy on my guy. You don't see a problem with that.
Here's the thing. Bill Clinton, not an employee, right? He's not, and Loretta Lynch is not working for Bill Clinton. So Bill Clinton could say anything, right? And it's Loretta Lynch's job not to be put in that situation. Now, Trump is the boss. So they have to report to him anyway. He can make suggestions about anything.
What about when he's being investigated?
He could tell Comey, I hope you guys start wearing light blue suits.
But what if you're being, like, John, do you have any concerns as a law enforcement person that the president and his team are being investigated by the FBI, and then he cans the FBI director and says to Lester Holt on TV, I was thinking about this investigation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you want to muddy the waters if you're Harry, but at the end of the day, this guy, the guy, whoever it is, put it down onto the local level. The New Haven Police Department is investigating somebody, and then somebody with political influence calls the chief of police and says, hey, Officer so-and-so is a good guy. You shouldn't do it. I mean, is that appropriate? That's the same. That's where we are. Of course not.
Did you have any concerns about, for instance, his talking to the Russians about intelligence that he got from Israel about ISIS? Because you ran the intelligence division.
Yeah, it's completely different kind of criminal intelligence, that type of intelligence. But I think that I did until H.R. McMaster came on and spoke. So I believe he's credible in my eyes. I think he's got a credible way.
Do you think what
way.
He said was a denial or a non-denial denial?
It's a bit of a non-denial denial, but I think that may have been exaggerated just by, you know, by his take on it, to be honest with you. I mm-hmm. believe what he had to say. But well, I could tell you that as far as Comey is concerned, and I'm not telling you I'm a huge fan of Jim Comey. I don't think one way or the other of him, but I do know he's the head of the Federal Law Enforcement Agency. And if they're in the middle of an investigation into the president, and the president just says you're fired, I mean, that just flies in the face of logic that makes sense.
Let me just say this about McMaster, right? He said, he comes down and he says, I was in the room. It never happened. That's not a weak denial there.
Now, it is true that the National Security Agency, after that meeting, it was the National Security Agency happened. That freaked out. That said, we have a problem.
Now here we go.
We got to repair the damage. He said something he shouldn't have said. It's going to came from his own NSA.
Those are New York Times, Washington Post sources saying everybody lost their heads.
No, McMaster didn't deny that. He said that the NSA had that reaction and did.
No,
he just said it was appropriate. It was wholly.
He didn't deny that he contacted the agencies, which I think is his job. Once they've actually spoken about some classified information, to actually call the agencies and say, hey, listen, this is what we talked about. That's his job.
And nobody any, lost any concerns, their head Harry, over it's it. Hard to keep track of all this. Were you at all concerned? Because, you know, a lot of your Republican
and
senators
the,
are very
timing,
concerned about
and the timing, what do you think Hillary would have done when
No, 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 no. Were you concerned
president?
To find out
Comey would have been out.
That Mr. Flynn was a paid agent of Turkey during the campaign.
Yeah, throw Flynn
and
in jail.
What we've learned is that he told the Trump administration that before he was named the NSA, and they still named him. Wait,
Flynn
the Trump administration knew, and they gave him security clearance after they found out he was a paid agent of the
Flynn
thugs who
Trump
loves in
Turkey. Flynn needs to testify in front of Congress and say those words. But hearsay four times over, which is what the New York Times and Washington Post does, I'm not going to believe anything they do.
Well, do you believe that it's true that Jeff Sessions overturned a policy of the Justice Department under Obama and said, I now want you to go for all the mandatory minimum sentences you can of any even nonviolent drug cases, and we're going to fill jails up again, while there's a consensus of conservatives and liberals throughout this country that we threw too many people in jail and it made the problem worse and didn't make us any safer?
Well, I think it doesn't matter what they do. The liberal judges will give the sense
Harry,
of truth.
What about all these right-wing judges have been appointed? Yeah, the liberal judges can't do anything with the mandatory minimum.
Well, mandatory minimum, if they exist now, those mandatory minimum?
Yes, tons of them.
So then what's the problem? I mean,
because it's locking
don't we
up a
have
lot
to change the laws?
No,
we have to change them.
No, what we do is this. You know, in law enforcement sometimes, if you have somebody and you know they're on the brink teetering of an arrest that carries a mandatory minimum, a lot of the times we give you the benefit of the doubt and charge you with the lower crime that doesn't carry the mandatory minimum because we know you're going to get whacked for no real good reason and put in jail for a long time. What he's saying is that, listen, that process that law enforcement is done. We want you to charge with the most serious
Harry,
crime
there's always
that
discretion.
You
there's always discretion. And he's saying
right.
now that
so
even if someone is nonviolent,
discretion.
Doesn't pose a threat to society, find the strongest penalties you can find against everybody. And there's been documented over and over again that this disproportionately affects the black community. It disproportionately affects people who aren't violent. It locks them for a long time, destroys and families. It doesn't make them
there's no
any
way
more
around
equipped
those
to be productive citizens when they come out. But John, on the other hand, when you guys did your raids of drug gangs with the federal government, you use those mandatory minimums and try to get federal charges to put them away for longer because you feel like that's the way to break up the gang.
That is the way to break up the gangs. And I'm going to tell you that between Bloodline and R2, you're
that was
talking,
Operation Bloodline and taking down New Hope Group R2. We did those two joint investigations.
So you're talking 200 people, right? All went federal, just about, and 187 went federal. And I am a proponent of everything you're saying, and I have complete confidence that everybody that we took off had some way, shape, or form was in the drug business, in the gang business,
well,
in the violence business.
Weren't some of those people very violent people who were
very
directing
violent, sure.
things, but weren't a lot of other people... Kids who are making not even minimum wage and never shot anybody?
Had never shot anybody, sure. But are they jockeying guns back and forth? Are they perpetuating the gang culture that results in robberies and violence? Absolutely.
But do you want them locked up for 15 years?
Do I want them? I want them. See, that's the whole thing with the mandatory minimum is that I don't really agree with. And when I talk about when we reviewed charges on those cases, we would look at that and say, you know, is this a guy we want locked up for 15 years?
So now Jeff Sessions, can tell you you can't do that anymore.
Right. And listen, ultimately that exists now because the federal government, once it goes into the federal realm, they're going to tell you what they're going to charge and what they're not going to charge.
And now he's saying that they can't take your advice right on that. If you're the cop in New Haven, so we know better about, you ran the intelligence division, you know better whether the person really poses a threat.
So you could talk to your U.S. attorney and say, listen, I know this guy here, he's hung up in this job, but he's not, you know, a guy that you should be putting down for a mandatory minimum. They could say yay or nay to that. Now what Sessions is saying is there's no more, it is what it is, and you're doing it, and that's it.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time, but immigration arrests are up 38% since Donald Trump took over and Jeff Sessions. Now they found that half the people they're arresting committed no crime except the act of coming to this country illegally. Local police officials have said this policy is making it harder. Cops are saying, you know, we love this tough on crime business. Sessions and Trump said we're going to support police chiefs. Police chiefs are overwhelmingly telling the Trump administration this is making it harder for us to police because then they don't trust us as much. And we agree with you, if someone's a violent felon, we want them deported. But with all these nonviolent, non-criminal people you're collecting, you're making it harder for them to trust us and police our cities. Any thoughts on that, you guys?
Go ahead. You know how I feel about that. I think that that's exactly true. You can't take a lot of time bringing a culture forth to embrace it and then kick it back to the curb. But go ahead, Harry. I know you have strong feelings on it.
No, my thing is, if they get picked up while you're picking up the...
No, they're going to everyone's houses. They're actually going to houses early in the morning, and they're going to where they know they're going in public.
I don't know. I have to actually read that.
No, but they say it's a fact, and they say it's okay. They say the act of coming here is illegal, so we want to use our resources.
That's
so
true.
Half the people, this 38% increase.
And you're telling me because immigration is going to pick these people up, other immigrants that crime is being committed against them, they won't talk?
Well, they're all scared of race.
That doesn't connect. Especially when you have the New Haven, the police department say, oh, we're going to leave them alone.
Yeah, and but you got Trump administration saying we're going to penalize your city. No, you're going to penalize cities that don't cooperate. You're getting a lot of cities that are cooperating.
They're deputizing
local cops to participate.
You can't. What you're doing is you're conflating both departments, and I don't think the people are doing that, especially when you're holding their hands and saying, you'll be okay in New Haven.
No, they're not feeling they're going to be okay in New Haven.
Well, they'll be okay in New Haven. Unless
they're coming. They're coming to courthouses. They're coming to places.
Well, if they're going into a courthouse, why? Why are they in the courthouse?
Because a lot of times, Harry, it's a very non-violent traffic violation or something.
They're
so if you didn't see a red light, they're going to come deport you.
So you're saying immigration shouldn't do their job?
I'm saying that they should focus on violent people pose a threat to other people's livelihoods.
Part of their job is the non-violent people, too.
All right. Any last words, John Vilek?
No, we could end on that, on Harry.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today. Dateline Haven, a lot to talk about. Thanks to our guest, WNHH resident law enforcement expert, John Vilecka, and Harry Droz, the bravest man in New Haven, still reigning champ. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. Now, we know what it's like to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. Book your flight with us all day and all night long here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.